something amazing.
Hey, mustache, what's up?
I love my mommy.
I will never forgive you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a Sports Talk Chicago special, a one-on-one interview with James Murray of Impractical Jokers. Before we get started, just a few quick announcements. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports. Hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags. And also, if you're looking for a place here in the Chicagoland area to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for both adults and children, check out the Arts and Crafts Studio by Moochie World, where inspiration meets creation. You can find them at the Tinley Park Down Shopping Center at 7913 West 171st Street in Tinley Park. If you'd like, give them a call at 708-247-2100. Again, that's 708-247-2100. Now, before we get started, I just wanted to clarify as to why we're having somebody on who is not necessarily related to the sports world. Personally speaking, I decided to get Murr on, one, because I'm a huge Impractical Jokers fan. Those guys are hilarious, and I am an avid viewer of their program. But second off, there's more to Murr than simply him being a jokester on TV. We have many different topics planned to talk about today. We're talking about his new book coming out, titled Awaken, his run in politics for a brief week, and, of course, some Impractical Jokers highlights. I appreciate you, the viewer, being so accommodating with this and welcoming in some fresh perspectives on some pop culture and some current events. And with that, it's time for our special guest. His comedy career began in 1990 when he joined an improv club as a freshman in high school. After college, he worked at the Staten Island Ferry, where the idea was hatched to start a comedy group with his old friends from high school. Today, he's a part of that same comedy group, the Tenderloins, while being the star of Impractical Jokers. He's also the senior vice president of development at North South Productions and the author of Awakened, a sci-fi thriller. Please welcome James Murray, a.k.a. Murr, to the show. James, how you doing today? Thank you for being here on the show. It's a pleasure.
What's up, John? Thanks for having me. This is going to be fun.
So, first off, Murr, I wanted to allude right back to that comedy career in high school and how it all got started. Now, you, Sal, Joe, and Q, you all met during your freshman year in high school. Before I even ask about your rise to the top, is it true that you guys all decided to join an improv club because it was, quote, the only way to meet girls?
Q said it was only way meet girls, and which is true. We went to an all-boys Catholic high school, you know. And so he was not wrong about that.
So, reasoning aside, you guys all met during freshman year. You stayed friends throughout and then separated for college. So, how did the idea of forming a comedy group come about, and what happened after that?
Sal and I were on the Staten Island Ferry going to work. We all had different jobs at that point, right? Like, Joe was a consultant, and then he worked at a baby store selling baby furniture. Sal was a bartender. He worked at Prudential Securities. Then he was a bartender. She was a fireman. I was mostly unemployed. and Sal and I were on the ferry together one day. We said, you know what? We should get together and do comedy again. We love doing it in high school. So we formed. Joe wanted to be involved too. He was a guest performer with us back then, then became a full member of the Tenderloins. And we said, let's just start doing shows. And we did. And I did improv all throughout college too, you know, at Georgetown. And we just loved making people laugh. And we performed for so many years together before we moved into sketch comedy, before all this TV stuff happened, just kind of, you know, cutting our teeth and getting our voice down. I can't believe it took a long time to succeed. I'll tell you that much. You know, people are like, oh, you guys came out of nowhere. I was like, no, we tried for like 12 years before we got famous, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, you know, it took you that long. You were doing online sketches, you were doing stuff on YouTube. So what prompted the jump from going to YouTube to becoming, you know, on TV, becoming this big-time group on True TV? How did it all happen from that point till now?
Well, Jokers is our third TV show, the first one to go to series. We've been trying to break into TV for a long time. I run development for a TV company, and that was the first real job, not a BS job anymore, that I had. And and I pitched a lot of shows to the guys on the internet. So I sold an improv show to A&E, shot a pilot, didn't get a series. We sold a sketch comedy show to Spike TV, shot a pilot, didn't get a series. 6 months later, we sold a pilot to True TV called Mission Uncomfortable, a.k.a. Impractical Jokers, and thank God they greenlit it, and that was it. And then life took off after that. But it was we've been trying for many years. It took us a while to figure out what the right hook was, you know, and Jokers was it. It was like the right kind of show that put our friendship on display, which, that's like the biggest thing, the biggest compliment I think that people say is like, you guys remind me of my best friends growing up, or you remind me of what it was like when I was a kid. And I used to do that kind of stuff. And I think that's a huge compliment, you know, I think it's because we remind people of their best memories.
Definitely. Know? Definitely. I agree. And, you know, I just wanted to say that must have been, you know, very frustrating for you guys to go, you know, three times on your third time to finally get on TV. You know, I can only imagine how that could have been for all you guys before you finally made it, you know?
I'll tell you what. Literally 4 weeks before we sold Impractical Jokers, Joe had enough. He decided to, you know what, I'm not going to do the Tenderloins anymore. We got time to move on with our lives. And he said, no, I'm out. And then a few days later, he's like, now, okay, I'm back in. And he joined. 1 month later, we sold Impractical Jokers.
Wow.
So, you know what? Don't give up in life ever, you know? If you love it, keep doing it.
Definitely, I agree. So first I wanted to ask about punishment. So when there's a punishment that someone doesn't want to do, someone else always comes up and talks about a pact you guys made. So what is that pact, and how does it have to do with the punishments?
It is a gentleman's agreement. When we created the TV show, we said, this is really two rules. Don't get killed. Second, you cannot say no to a punishment, ever. It's a gentleman's pact. And so, like, it's worth usually getting to me because they made me go skydiving. I'm terrified of skydiving. They made me swim with sharks. I'm terrified of sharks. If I ever saw a shark with a parachute skydiving next to me, that would be my worst nightmare. You know? that was it. That was the gentleman's pact, and we stood by it. You cannot say no to a punishment.
You segued right into my next question because I was going to ask you about the skydiving incident. You had a deathly fear of heights, were forced to skydive. Now, via the inside jokes version of the episode, I did see that the others were seriously considering allowing you not to do it. So, if you don't mind telling me about that fateful day in your eyes, how did it all play out?
They had a backup plan because there was an expensive shoot. You know, you got to rent the plane, you got to rent the whole thing. The shoot probably cost like $10,000 for that one thing, right? But they had backup. Sal is also afraid of heights, but he's gone skydiving before, you know, so he was okay with it. They were going to have him do it if I said no. And violated the gentleman's agreement. What's not on TV is as soon as they told me, I ran into the bathroom and I locked myself in the bathroom for a half hour. I wouldn't come out.
Oh.
And I decided to do it because not just because of the gentleman's pact, but also because I thought comedically it would be the best choice. I knew how I would react. I just didn't know I could scream that high pitched. and the crazy thing is I sent like goodbye texts to my family and friends. I tried calling my mother and she sent me the voicemail and texted me back, I'm at Macy's, I'll call you later.
that's so funny. That's hilarious.
that was probably the closest we came to somebody saying no to a punishment.
So, speaking of punishments, now there was one more that came to my mind when thinking of you. It was the one where you were all in the park and your blanket, which looked very old to say the least, was burned. Now, this is interesting because the first blanket wasn't the real one. Then Joe burned the actual one. So, why was that blanket so significant to you, and have you forgiven Joe for doing that?
My blanket is on my bed right now. I just slept with it last night. So, and if you watch Inside Jokes, they reveal this too. And we talk about it in After Party too. Both blankets were fake. Blankets. They had Shay, who works on the TV show, break into my apartment, unbeknownst to me, a week earlier, steal my real blanket, give it to a seamstress. The seamstress designed two identical blankets, and they put it back in my apartment without me even knowing. So both blankets were fake. I got home that day from set thinking my blanket was burned. I walked in my apartment, it was still in my bed. I was like, thank God. Thank God. I have very little in life. I'm not married. I've never found love. The blanket's the best I got. My grandmother made it for me when I was born, you know? It's like, you know, it was much bigger back then.
Definitely, I agree. apparently, though, there was one punishment that made you say, quote, this is the worst day of my life, and that came when your tooth fell out of your mouth during filming. Once you had to take selfies with your, quote, black in front chomper, I have to admit, I felt bad. What was that like for you?
That was mortifying. I mean, it's so unflattering. You know, anybody that has dental work knows that, like, when you get a cap put on, the nub of the tooth underneath is disgusting and gross, you know? I have, like, caramel teeth. I got, like, eight fake teeth, you know? Because, when you know, I grew up in the 80s. There was no good, you know, I used to eat a box of Twinkies a day. My mother, do you remember Duncan Hines frosting, the tub of Duncan Hines frosting, you know? My mother used to give me a tub of the vanilla frosting as my snack. I used to eat it in one sitting. This is what it was like in the 80s. It was crazy. This is what it was like growing up in Staten Island in the 80s. You know, the amount of Fruity Pebbles cereal I ate, I basically grew up on sugar. That's it. So my teeth fall out on the regular. So it was my worst nightmare.
Okay, one more moment, and one at the time that you weren't fully aware of. So while you guys were filming, Joe got hold of your fresh loaf of bread that you picked up from a bakery. While you were gone, Joe took the bread out of its bag and rubbed it all over his groin area. Now, since you didn't know at the time, you ended up eating it as if nothing happened. So when did you actually find out about this, and how mad were you on a scale of 1 to 10?
Okay, I should point out it wasn't just his groin. It was also... beep this. It was also in his asshole. It was also right in his asshole, right?
Right.
So, he rubs... I had no idea I ate the whole... I see Panera, I buy the bread. That's how I was raised, right? The bread's delicious.
Of course.
So, I'm chomping away the bread. I know nothing about this. Fast forward, 2 months later, I'm in my apartment watching the episode live on TV, and I see it, and I literally almost threw up in my apartment. I found out when you found out.
Oh, so before we finish talking about moments on the show, I'd love to know what your favorite moment has been so far.
Good question. You know what? The 100th episode where we walked the tightrope and Q successfully walked across it and won the $100,000 for charity was probably one of the best moments in the show. It was like an emotional and career high. That was really special. This season, coming up at the end of next year, is our 200th episode.
Wow.
And that's going to be amazing. And then, you know, we're shooting the Impractical Jokers movie now. We're literally now. And that comes out next spring in theaters worldwide. That's going to be probably my favorite moment.
So speaking of season 8, I wanted to congratulate you on being renewed for another season. So how special has this been for you, and did you ever really think that you'd make it this far?
No, I mean, you know, most TV shows don't make it past one season, ever.
Right.
You know, and it's been mind-blowing and humbling, and I know, and we, you know, as I said, we're regular guys. We don't know anybody in the business, things like that. We just worked really hard and got very lucky, and we know that a lot of that the success that we're having now is entirely because of how amazing our fans are, and they just care for us and want to see us succeed because they know our story. And it's been unbelievable. I got to tell you, it's really been a heck of a ride. It's led to amazing things, led to amazing things like the book for me, you know?
Right, definitely. And speaking of your book, let's get to that for a moment. So you've been very busy outside of your commitment with the Tenderloins. You've recently written the book titled Awakened, which is a sci-fi thriller based in New York. So can you tell me more about the book and why you decided to write it? Have you been an author at heart all this time?
The story of the book is very much like the story of Impractical Jokers. I wrote the book 14 years ago.
Wow.
I spent a year of my life writing the book. And I have a degree in English from Georgetown. I can write a book. You know, I had this idea. I was really passionate about it. It's a monster book, takes place in the subways. It's very tight, tense tale. The book reads like the very best episodes of the TV show 24. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's exciting and fast-paced and scary, but in a good way. It's not, like, too gory or anything like that. And it's this really tight story about these people trapped in a new subway system they build in New York City while these creatures are hunting them, you know? And I wrote the book 14 years ago, and like I said, I didn't know anybody in the business. None of us did. We were just regular guys. I sent it out to publishers and literary agents, and literally got returns to me unopened by every single one, unopened, which is, you know, in this... It happens all the time, right? Rejection is part of life, but when you're being rejected without even being considered for the material, that's heartbreaking, you know? And it's funny, like, fast forward 14 years later, now we're on TV, and I sent the book into HarperCollins. One day later, they bought it from me. You know,
wow.
And I know it's because our fan base and I really, you know, was passionate about the book when I wrote it. I feel like the story is the story of how it came about is inspiring. You know, the fact that you should never, ever, ever give up on what you love and your dreams and keep going with it. I think that's the lesson of the whole book. So the book comes out in June. It's available now for pre-order on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold. It's called Awakened. You're going to love it. And because the pre-sales have been so successful, the publishers ordered two more for me. So it's going to be a trilogy now. So every summer for the next 3 years, there'll be a new Awakened book coming out.
Wow, that's so interesting. I was just going to ask you, you know, if we could see some more books in your future. That's awesome. And I wanted to get back, though, to all those rejections. You know, being rejected for TV shows like that, rejected for your book, you know, it's awesome that you were able to overcome all that adversity to get where you are today.
It's the story. You know, people are like, oh, you guys, never heard of you before. We're a 12-year overnight success story. It took a long time and a lot of hard work, you know, but it pays off if you keep with it.
So I wanted to get back to the Jokers because there's a question that I had and I'm sure a lot of other people have. So you guys are very famous now. You're at season 8 in your show, and you guys always film in public. That's one of the big things about you guys. Since you're very popular and everyone knows who you are, has it been more difficult to film in public, and will you continue to do so in season 8? Because, you know, a lot of people probably realize, oh, you know, it's these guys from TV. It's a skit. I'm going to play along. You know, how hard is it for you now that you're so big?
It's harder for sure, but we have ways to make sure the show has to be real. It has been real since day one. It will always be real because I think you can tell it's real. Like, we are mortified doing these things, you know? We're regular guys. We're not actors like that. We are truly mortified. And that's the secret sauce of the show. It must be real. So, but we have ways to keep it real. So for example, like, last night we filmed The Punishment with Sal and, before he's at a networking event, right? And before he walked into the room, I walked through the networking event, and we're watching the people in the room, and we watch for whoever recognizes me as I walk through the room. We take those people, we pull them out, thank them for coming to the event, and they leave. So the only people left in the room are people who have no clue who I am. So when Sal walks in 10 minutes later, they certainly don't know who he is either. So it stays real. We call it the sniff test to see if anybody notices us, you know? We have little tricks like that to make sure the show stays authentic and real. So, you know, but honestly, it's a really good problem to have. It means the show is successful, so.
Right, yeah, exactly. That's really cool that you guys are able to maintain your integrity while still, you know, making a really good show. So, now with the show renewal, you mentioned earlier how you guys are going to be having a feature-length film. What can we expect from this? Where can we watch it? When is it coming out? Give us all the details.
Tentatively planned for like spring break next year, that time, in theaters. It's called Impractical Jokers the Movie. It's the biggest Impractical Jokers event of all time. It's us traveling cross-country competing in mega insane hidden camera challenges. And it's the movie starts with us in high school in 1992, and an event that happens to us. It's like a narrative beginning and end that sets us off on this journey to compete in hidden camera challenges to see who's going to lose. And the loser of the movie is the most fantastic punishment you'll ever see. There you go.
Oh, I can't wait. That's a perfect hook. I'm definitely going to go out to see this movie. Your book was realistic. It was something that I could see you doing. When you announced your candidacy for a congressional seat in 2015, I was personally stunned. What motivated you to do this, and why did you drop out so quickly? It was only a week after.
It was an April Fool's Day joke. That's why. I will never, ever run for Congress. You know? It was an April Fool's Day joke. Fans, unfortunately, and the press took it seriously. And literally, the Staten Island Advance newspaper ran a poll, and I was ahead in the polls.
Wow.
Literally, I had like it was like 75% of Staten Island said they would vote for me, and then like another 15% said they were favorable about my candidacy. That means I had almost 90% approval rating. I was like, I called the president of the network. I was like, if you accidentally get me written in and elected to Congress, you're going to have to figure out the Impractical Jokers shooting schedule. I'm taking the job. It was, dude, I did not expect that. But it was an April Fool's Day joke, that's why.
So here's my question, though, because online when I was looking this stuff up, I also saw a video that really kind of targeted you and used some clips from the show to, you know, maybe say that you were unpatriotic or something of the sort. Was that you guys as well, or did some hate group actually make that up?
No, it's True TV. It was an April Fool's Day joke.
Oh.
So I released my candidacy video. Then we also released secretly a smear campaign video. And then I released the third video withdrawing from the race. It's all an elaborate prank.
Oh, that's funny. Now that we're, you know, this is a sports site, I wanted to move on sports for just a moment. I understand now that you played baseball as a kid and made a big play for your team. I'd love to hear the story.
A big play? Good call. I never had the confidence to play play baseball or anything like that. I used to play a lot. I was pretty good. I'm the only one out of four of us that's athletic, I'd say. as you can see from any time I'm naked on TV and look at their bodies. Anyways, so what gave me the confidence in sports was a freshman year of high school. I was on my baseball team, and you know, they stuck me in right field and you know whatever. And it was my team was unbeatable. We had won every game, and it was like the championship, and we were about to win. It was the last out. We're at bottom of the, I guess, seventh inning. I think we played seven innings, right? And the other team had bases loaded, and they were about, if they scored, they were going to beat us. It was two outs. Then the kid gets up a bat, and he hits a deep high fly to right field. So the last, if I catch it, we win. If I don't catch it, we lose the World Series, right? And we had an undefeated record at that point. And I stumble around, I'm running back and forth, and I caught the damn ball. And the whole team lifting on my shoulders crazy. And I hadn't done anything of any value the whole season, and that was it. And the team goes crazy. Undefeated record, we won the championship. And that gave me the confidence. And then I became the captain of my baseball team over years, and then softball team as we got older. And I became a very good player, you know, confidence that you can succeed.
Yeah, it's a really cool story, actually, because I was looking it up last night, and I was like, you know, I want to find something about Murr in regards to sports, and that's a really cool story, being able to, you know, help out your team any way you could and win the championship like that. That's really
cool. Do you remember the movie Mr. Destiny?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
With, what's his name? Belushi, John Belushi.
Yes, yes.
James Belushi's in it. What a great movie. It's the same kind of story. His whole life is different depending on whether he catches that ball in the outfield, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
It's the home run. Yeah. I love sports. I grew up going to see Giants games, you know, and I love seeing live sports all the time.
Oh, that's really cool because, you know, you guys also filmed with the New York Mets, so I wanted to know how, you know, was that experience for you guys and for you personally, standing right next to Syndergaard and all that?
I know. You know, it was Thor himself. It was unbelievable. It was so cool, you know, being on the field during games and stuff, and it was nerve-wracking for poor Joe, man, oh, man, oh, man, you know, like, just catching signed balls and taking them from children. What a cringeworthy punishment. He was done by the end of that. He wanted nothing to do with the TV show.
So, on a final note, I know you had many nicknames in college, including Murph, Furry Murray, and Jimothy, but on the show, you are referred to as a ferret. So how'd that nickname catch on and stay with you throughout?
You tell me. I don't know. I don't know. No one ever called me a ferret in high school. I don't know where it came from. I don't think if you see a ferret's hairline, they have that white kind of, I have the same kind of forehead. So I think that's where it came from. Is it like a ferret, I have a, you know, weird McDonald's arch of a forehead because of my receding hairline. At this point, it's not a receding hairline. It's an advancing forehead.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Murr, thank you so much for being here on the show. It was an awesome interview, probably one of my most memorable personally. Thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.
You got it, bud. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, there you have it, folks. Murr from Impractical Jokers on the show today. It was awesome. Having him on was really cool, and the fact that I'm a fan of his made it just 10 times better. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at @ChiTalkSports. Hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram, all at John Zags. And also, make sure to subscribe to the website so you can get updates through your email about when new posts are put on the site. Thank you again for listening, and have a great day.